You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
Kia ora, tēnā koutou. You are listening to Radio 1 91 FM. This is Sian of Spinning Yarns with Sian. Today I have an amazing guest on. It is fair to say I've done a little bit of fangirling over this guest. He has all of the attributes that I like. He's a sea lion lover, an ocean lover. He is a photographer, a published author. Let's get him on. This is Derek Morrison. Welcome, Derek.
Kia ora, Sian. Thanks for the great intro. Nice to be here.
You're very welcome. How are you today?
Oh, I'm very good, thank you. Yeah, no, not too bad at all. Been had a good week out there. Been a little bit of surfing and a bit of time on the beach, so I'm happy.
I mean, that's a winning formula right there. I don't know how you could be upset with that. So, Derek, tell us about your whakapapa.
Okay, so, well, I'm originally a farm boy from the Waikato, so deep in the heart of the Waikato. backed up to Arapuni Village, our farm went, and grew up there, and it was a beautiful place to grow up, actually. It was a long way from the sea, but I didn't realise how much I'd love it when I was a kid, so I just enjoyed what we had, and it was pretty special for me, actually. Beautiful environment, learned a lot about nature, spent a lot of time in the rivers. Don't know how I didn't kill myself in the rafting down rivers and doing stupid things on the farm, but managed to survive all that. And yeah, it was just really just an awesome place to grow up and start my life, really, and probably where I got my passion for nature and sort of led into things that I still do today. I see it reflected in what I did as a kid.
The Waikato is certainly a beautiful region to grow up in. I did grow up in Matamata, not too far from where Derek grew up, and not too many years apart. It is an awesome region with lush green farmland. There is the mighty Waikato River, which I think is the longest river in New Zealand.
I'm pretty sure it is. I've rafted down quite a bit of it, but not all of it.
There we go. I believe you. Yeah. So Derek and I are obviously both drawn by Moana, by the ocean, and if you haven't been to where we grew up in Arapuni and in Matamata, also known more as Hobbiton nowadays, you'll know that it is in fact inland. So what brought you down to Dunedin?
I guess when we left the farm about 1987, we ended up leaving the farm, and I ended up our family moved to Cambridge, which is also another beautiful place. But I kind of felt like I was right in the city there, even though we're on a lifestyle block. It was quite cramped, and I found it quite difficult. So I ended up sort of rebelling a little bit, and was at boarding school. Then I went to Massey University to become a vet, of all things, trying to keep myself outdoors and in that in that kind of work around the rural communities. And while I was there, I met some people who surfed a lot, and I just started surfing when I was at high school, and so we'd start surfing from Massey University, which is in Palmerston North, also a very long way away from the coast. But we'd go probably two or three times a week to the coast, and I started to just fall in love with this new horizon. It just reminded me of being back on the farm, where you didn't see anyone in any direction for a long way, and we were surfing the Wairarapa and up around Taranaki, southern Taranaki, and just beautiful coastline, beautiful experiences, and I just really fell in love with that, actually, more than anything.
That is one of the privileges of living here in Aotearoa, visiting Aotearoa. You can go to many of our magic hidden spots and be alone, which is such a treat, because you do go overseas and there are lots and lots of beautiful spots overseas, I've heard. I have not done much travel myself as yet, but unfortunately they are really populated, so that's really nice that you can go to a beach and have the waves, the surf, essentially to yourself.
Oh yeah, I think we're still really lucky in Aotearoa that we can do that. There's a lot of, like you say, you have to go a long way and find some really cool little spots internationally to be able to do the same thing these days.
Yes.
But we can actually all do it. And in Dunedin here, and it's a classic, I was the only one on the beach yesterday at Smales.
And
a few sea lions, and that was it. And it's, you know, that's quite easy to do. And all up the peninsula, you can repeat that everywhere, really. So, look, we're just really super lucky. I guess I sort of fell in love with it, and a friend of mine back at Massey when I was studying there, she actually gave me a camera to use, and I took the camera and started photographing what we were doing, because I was thinking, this is amazing and I want to share this with my whānau. And we actually went and I sent a few of the photos away from those trips to New Zealand Surfing Magazine, and there was a really good editor there at the time, Chris Burge, who was a proper journalist, and he found the photos and he came back to me and said, oh, I need you to write the story for that. Can you write the story for that? And I was like, oh yeah, we can add a story to that. And while I was at university, he sent me back a check for $137. And for me, that was kind of like, well, actually, what am I doing here? I'm going to end up being stuck in the lab as a vet. I didn't really want to be doing that. At that stage, it was a lot of research jobs coming up. And so I saw the camera as my way to sort of stay connected to that horizon and stay on the coastline and you know, basically have the ability to travel basically for as long as I could travel, really, and move around the coastline. So, that was kind of a big moment for me.
I think even today as a student, receiving a $137 check would be like, I've made it. This is incredible. I am living my best life. And it sounds like you definitely found your calling. So you'd found a surfboard, you'd found a camera, and those were your two tools to make your career of choice happen.
Pretty much, yeah. When you boil it right down, those are the things that have dragged me to the places I've gone. And I mean, I'm so fortunate. I've had an amazing career, and it's taken me to incredible experiences. And it really does boil back down to those are the two first things I pack every time I go somewhere, even down the beach to somewhere in the peninsula or overseas. And yeah, they've dragged me everywhere. Yeah, it's been amazing.
That's awesome. It's almost as if your surfboard's been like a magic carpet.
Yeah, I've had a couple that have been like a magic carpet.
That's so cool. So how long did you work at the surfing magazine for, and what was your role?
So I worked there as a freelancer for about 6 years, and then I edited it for about 2 years, around 2000. And at that point, I kind of got a bit lured to Australia. There was
those Aussies.
I sort of had always grown up reading Tracks magazine, and I really loved the larrikin, the sort of craziness of it all, and, you know, Aussies just being completely raw and unfiltered. And so I thought I'd have a chance to try and work on a magazine over there. So I was offered to work on a dirt bike magazine, of all things, and right next door to them was the Tracks office and the Waves office for their magazine. So I thought eventually I'll move across to one of those titles. But the dirt bike magazine went sort of gangbusters while I was there, so I ended up in a really good position, really good role there, travelling around Australia, that my editor and the publisher and everybody surfed. We got issued with a wetsuit at the start of winter.
Oh, epic.
And it was pretty amazing. Everywhere we went to do stories about dirt bikes, we took our surfboards.
Yes.
And we'd often stay an extra day and just surf. And I spent a bit of time in Tasmania. I remember one trip there for a national event, and I think it was a 3-day event, and I think I spent 5 days, and two of those days were surfing by myself off the coast of Tasmania in some pretty amazing waves.
That sounds like the perfect work-life balance to me.
Yeah, it was very good. It was quite good. It was pretty funny being out with the editor at Kira. We'd stay at Kira every time we went up to the Gold Coast, and we surfed that so many times, and my editor was a really good surfer, and so we kind of pushed each other and just had some amazing times over there. It was awesome.
So what drew you back to Aotearoa?
Well, while I was over there, my wife Rachel and I had two girls, Taya and Rewa, so they were actually born in Manly Hospital. And then that kind of started to change things. Sydney was amazing for us and loved it. We had such a good time. But when you had children there, I started to add up, you know, how much travel I was doing, you know, how much time it was taking me away from spending time with the kids. And we kind of started thinking, we really, maybe it'd be easier for us to raise the kids in New Zealand. And so we made the call to come back to Dunedin. We could have come anywhere in New Zealand, and we had looked around, but for me, Dunedin had sort of won me over with its coastline.
Yes.
But there is just nothing that compares to this anywhere in the world. It's actually probably the best city for surfing anywhere in the world. There's a couple of places in Portugal, that one place in Portugal that comes close, but not quite the same as what we've got here. So in the end, I'm thinking, let's just make my life happen here in Dunedin, and try and recreate as much as all the good things that we'd had in Australia and bring those back to Dunedin and make them happen here.
That is so cool. Dunedin not only has the best surfing in the world, but also some of the rarest wildlife in the world. We have albatross nesting here, sea lions, pakaki, yellow-eyed penguins, hoiho. It is such a treat being here in Dunedin. Now, we are about to come to the closing of our first segment. Please hang around. We've got a lot more yarns to spin with Derek. And we're going to be talking about his incredible long-term project, Box of Light, his award-winning photograph of a sea lion swimming in the surf, his work with New Zealand Geographic. So do stay with us. Coming up is Sam Charlesworth, Girl on the Wind. Enjoy.
Since the day we sorry you did, but our time is up. Now all I have are memories of
Kia ora, tēnā koutou, hello, you are listening to Radio 1 91 FM, this is Spinning Yarns with Sian, I am Sian. Today I have on an amazing guest. He is a local legend, an award-winning photographer, author of 5 books, Derek Morrison, welcome back.
Kia ora Sian, thanks for the intro, that's awesome, great to be here.
Thank you for coming. So Derek, we've been discussing your career beginnings. You grew up in Arapuni, in the mighty Waikato, inland, unfortunately, but your heart was drawn by Moana and wildlife. So you were given a surfboard and you acquired a camera and you set off. You went to Australia and worked for a surfing magazine. Where to from there? You came back to Aotearoa. What next?
Right, well, when I got back to Dunedin, I actually worked with Allied Press, one of the oldest newspaper in New Zealand, actually, and worked there for a year just to try and find my feet, because I wanted to start a business here, but I didn't want to jump in thinking with an Australian mindset, because in Australia you can kind of do anything and be successful with it, because you've got such a big population, and I didn't want to make a mistake here, so I wanted to learn what was going on. And after about a year, I started my own company, Adventure Media Group. And as part of that, we would go and have adventures and basically travel around the country telling the great stories about our amazing wilderness areas and beautiful landscapes and a lot of mountain biking sort of stories and adventure stories around that sort of thing. And then obviously surf as well. And then after a while, I started realizing that in Dunedin, we didn't probably really realize how cool our coastline was. It felt like the city kind of had forgotten about it. And so I thought, I'm out there surfing all the time, and you're looking back and you're seeing this amazing perspective of this incredible city. And the more I surfed, the more I loved it, because you're looking at it, and I just thought, I've got to help share that a little bit with other people. And so I started... I decided to start Box of Light, which was going to be a weekly blog that would take photos. I'd take photos of the beaches and share them with via email to subscribers. It would be free to subscribe, and I would show them why this coastline is so important and how cool it is, and hopefully share that feeling of wanting to protect it as well with the subscribers through just making them fall in love with it, really.
Absolutely, and we do protect what we love. And especially for people like me, who the cold is a little bit of a deterrent, and there may be people out there like me who are a bit too wimpy to get into Dunedin's cold surf. So to have someone out there promoting how incredible it is to just go ahead and do it, you forget about things like the cold and your other reservations and insecurities, and you get in there and have this incredible and unique experience. So what year did you start your first company, and what year did you start Box of Light?
So we got back to New Zealand in 2008, and 2009 we started Adventure Media Group, and it was actually 2011 that Box of Light started.
And that was how I first heard about you, actually, Box of Light. I am new to Dunedin, and Derek, you came on my radar through your amazing mahi at Box of Light, your amazing photography, and through all of your advocacy work for New Zealand Sea Lions Pakaki. So, what was your initial goal with Box of Light beyond your blog?
Initially, it was to just grow a body of really cool images that of experiences that I'd had over time, and really just to share that with people. It kind of developed its own following. I think now we've reached about 7,000 people, so it's gone...
Not too shabby, not too shabby.
That's right, yeah, that's pretty good. And they're very... very loyal people. They reply, it goes out on Tuesday at 10:30 every day, and I get a lot of replies all through Tuesday. My Tuesday afternoons are pretty much written off replying to people, and if I haven't replied, I'm sorry. I do try to, but most people really they find these new places. We have a lot of photographers that follow it as well, and they'll find these spots and want to know where the spots are that I've photographed. And actually, it's funny, because it really was around the surf experience, and it still is really rooted in the surf experience, but it's got a lot broader. It's got a lot more. A lot of our readers, probably half our readers, don't actually surf. They just love seeing the coastline, and they love seeing the perspective from the surf. I think one of my readers is 82 years old now, and she's been with me since the very beginning, and she lived in Florida for a while. So we've got there's a place in Florida where we've got a lot of subscribers, and she communicates with me more than anyone does, and she's been amazing. But she's you know, she sort of shows you the span of it. I thought, you know, would surfing, a lot of the stories are really rooted in surfing, will she appreciate those? But she just loves them as well. And I think she just commented on, I was very fortunate to do a trip to Indonesia in September, and you know, she's straight away commenting on all the blogs that come from that, and it's very cool.
That is so empowering, because I think as individuals we often forget how much power we actually possess and how much impact on the world we actually have. And as you say, you think that perhaps you are just sharing stories of surfing, but you've created a community, a space where people can go who love surfing, who love nature, who just want to investigate Aotearoa and all of its hidden gems. That is so cool.
Thank you, Sian. Yeah, that is right. It's got a lot bigger and a lot broader than I ever expected it to be. And you know, I'm really, really pleased to be able to do it. It's cool for me, because it means I get to go to the. I've got an excuse to go to the beach every day.
Yes, exactly. And as you were saying to me earlier, Your wife suspects it's an excuse sometimes, right?
Yeah.
For you to get away from your responsibilities at home, perhaps?
Yeah, well, I think for 13 years I'm able to get up at dawn and disappear, and she's totally happy with that, and I come back, you know, covered in salt, and she's totally fine with it, so that's great. I'm very lucky there, very, very fortunate to have her support for
she
that.
She sounds like an amazing woman, yeah.
Yeah, no, yeah. She's been pretty amazing with the whole thing, because it's, you know, it's not probably the best logical choice financially, but philosophically for me, it really works really well, and it lets me, yeah, express what I'm doing. And as you say, it becomes a platform for so many other people to be able to, you know, indulge in their love of the coastline as well.
Exactly. And as they say, behind every great man is a great woman, and what you have cultivated is such an empowering and unique community, and they've also linked surfing to improving mental health outcomes and that type of thing. So it's not just a sport, it's not just a community, this is actually improving people's lives. And as you say, the neat thing is you've been able to turn it into a career, your passion into a career, which I believe a lot of us would love to know how to do. So will you take us a little bit through that, how you turned your passion into a career?
Yeah, I will come back to that. I'll just touch on something that you brought up there around surfing for mental health.
Yes.
It really is a super important one. And I think when I first came back in 2011, surfing in Dunedin was really restricted for the hardcore only. And it kind of had this perception that it was really brutal out there and dangerous and wild and crazy. And what's happened, I think what part of what Boxer Light did, we kind of softened it. We started to photograph those days that a tiny surf, anyone could surf on them, the sunshine, and it looks beautiful. I mean, I have got the advantage of, in photos, you can't tell how cold it is, right? But we do have beautiful, easy days to surf as well. And I think as a result of that, and also contributing to that is the technology advancing in wetsuits, but we have now got, you know, so many more people accessing the surf, and it's really become where it was really male dominated and hardcore sort of gruff locals. Now it's they're kind of the minority now, and there's way more hipsters and people learning and you know, soft top boards and long boards and a big range of different types of people enjoying that amazing asset that this city has.
And that's really cool. It sounds like you have counteracted that misinformation and then created a really inclusive space for all to enjoy Dunedin's incredible backyard.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, it's just, it is so good. And like you say, it's proven that cold water immersion is so good for you, as well as just that experience floating out there, watching the sun, watching the light off the water off the horizon, you know, looking back at the land as the light fills in. It's pretty special, and you can't really come out of that environment in the morning and be grumpy.
I can't imagine you could, no. Now, one unique thing about Dunedin's surf, which you will not encounter anywhere else in Aotearoa or in the world, is you may just encounter a New Zealand sea lion, Pakaki. Will you tell us a little bit about your experiences with Pakaki?
Okay, so, well, I've been, probably my first few experiences, I was frightened to death of them.
Because the big animals? Yeah.
They are very big animals. And I was also, at the same time, I was very fascinated by them. And I was very curious about them as well. So I started to want to know more about them, and I started to try and photograph them as much as I could. Particularly when I was swimming, I'd try and, you know, get the underwater photos. It looks beautiful. They're very, so graceful in the water. And so I've kind of built up in my head these photos that I want to capture of them in the surf as well, because they're actually amazing surfers as well, and they'll surf inside the wave, and it just looks really, really beautiful. So I have these shots that I've always wanting to take with them. The trouble I have is that when you're on a surfboard, they're pretty happy to come and say hello to you, but when you're swimming, a lot of them don't really like to. Yeah, they get a bit nervous of you.
I'm sorry, we're going to have to resume that in the next segment. Up next is Dee Stevens.
Your 2022 Radio 1 card
opens a portal to the ultimate dimension of deals and discounts in Aotearoa Dunedin.
10% off everything at Adju, excluding already discounted deals and alcohol. 10 Bank Street and online at adju.co.nz.
Did you hear that?
a celestial saving. There's even more deals for the taking. Go to r1.co.nz/onecard. Is an excellent spread.
Planet Media Advertising. Targeted media connecting brands and university students.
Planet Media is your gateway to more than 150,000 students in Otipoti and across Aotearoa. If you're looking at engaging with this vibrant, growing audience, Planet Media is just an email away. Planet Media works closely with clients to ensure the delivery of successful advertising services tailor-made to suit their individual needs. Email them now at hello@planetmedia.co.nz.
Planet Media Advertising, creating advertising outcomes that are out of this world.
Healthy boundaries are cool and sexy and help keep everyone safe.
The broadcasting standards are to keep anything scandalous, libelous, bigoted, racist, or just plain nasty off our airwaves.
So if you catch us slipping up, call us on that shit and you can make a complaint.
Just note down what your complaint is about, when you heard it, and email us at complaints@r1.co.nz.
You can also find a step-by-step guide on how to lodge a complaint on the Broadcasting Standards Authority website, bsa.govt.nz.
Hey, hey, you are listening to Radio 1 91 FM on this gorgeous grey Thursday afternoon. You're listening to Spinning Yarns with Sian. This is Sian. Today I have on an amazing guest. He is a local legend, an award-winning photographer, a writer, Derek Morrison. Welcome back.
Thank you, Sian. Great to be back again.
Cool. All right, so if you're just tuning in, we have been talking about Derek's interactions in the surf with New Zealand Sea Lion's Pakaki. And that is one of the unique experiences you can have here in Dunedin, because you will not find Pakaki elsewhere in Aotearoa or overseas. So Derek, just before we had our wee break, you were talking about your interactions with sea lions and how magnificent and acrobatic they are in the water.
Yeah, so I was just about to say about photographing them with, obviously when you're surfing, they're quite keen to come and say hello to you, but when you're actually floating in the water with the camera, they don't really want to be too involved with you. They'll actually be kind of a bit scared because you're a different shape to what they used to, and you're not as much of a you don't look as much of a plaything as the surfers do. So it can be quite hard to photograph them. Actually, you need to get one at the right age and the right sort of curiosity level to be able to make some good photographs when they come past in the water. So it's very they're pretty amazing creatures. And I think surfers, some surfers get the wrong end of the stick from them as well. They think that they're being aggressive, and a lot of the time we're kind of misreading it. I think dog owners are really good at understanding sea lions, and the reason for that is that they get used to their behaviour and they can start to read their behaviour a bit better. Jim Fyfe described a sea lion as, when it says hello, it's a hello that leaves your ears filled with sand. And I love that description of it.
Too right.
They can be very, very boisterous, and you know, they sort of see surfers as the ultimate plaything. If you're a surfer who starts squealing and carrying on and splashing the water and trying to furiously paddle away, they just, for them, that's just like gold. They just want to chase you, and it's game on. You know, they'll ignore everybody else and just follow that one surfer around.
It is challenge accepted. One of the best pieces of advice out there about sea lions is just be boring. Their behaviour is so much like dogs. And as Derek was saying, if you are an owner of a dog and you understand their signals, their behaviour, you've got to do the same with sea lions. You've just got to try to be brave, just try to be boring, and watch their behaviour, read their behaviour. So, Derek, what's a couple of misconceptions about sea lions? How should surfers and people encountering pakaki read sea lions and behave around sea lions?
Yeah, well, I think the most important thing is, like you say, being boring is number one. And you do that, you know, everyone has a different way of doing it, but you don't want to be paddling around furiously. You don't really want to catch the next wave that's coming, because that's also looks like you're running away. So often for me, I'll just sit on my board. I'll try not to make any eye contact with them. I'll try and make sure I can see where they are, because I really enjoy the experience. So I'm wanting to watch what they're doing, but not without making eye contact and challenging at all. And then when they're finished spinning around underneath my board and trying to bump my leg rope and trying to nibble on my toes and trying to make me do something, within about 2 minutes they'll actually disappear and go to the next person usually and try them. I have had a really good encounter at Perikanui Bay, and I was out surfing. It was very, very small, beautiful clear water, and there were about three Aussies that were out in the water, and I was just giving them the tune up on the sea lions, you know, okay, right, this is the deal, guys, you know, just be boring. And you know, because one came around and I was like, just be boring, don't catch any waves, we'll just cruise and just float out here, just let them do this thing and then everything will be fine. And sure enough, this young sea lion just disappeared back to the beach, and I was sitting there going, see guys, I told you it's really easy, you know, like that was, how simple was that? And I was thinking that felt too good to be true. It was really quick that he exited. And then about 2 minutes later, he turned back up with two other juvenile sea lions as well. And so there were three of them, and they took about 5 minutes each under all of our boards, spinning around all three of them, trying at the same time, really trying to get somebody to run and have a play. And they were so close. They had their mouths right open as they spun around underneath you. You know, you could have put your finger down and touched one of their canines. And then they would move on to the next person. And they went through all of us. And I just said, hold your tight, boys. And the boys were freaking out a bit, but everyone did as they were supposed to do. And then after about, 20 minutes, because they'd tried everyone, the three of them sat in between us where we were sitting. And the three sea lions were wrestling each other, constantly in between us, and we could have paddled over and touched them. You know, they were that close, and they were so busy wrestling that we started catching waves and they just ignored us.
What an incredible experience. They really are so curious and playful, and especially the juvenile bulls and the pups, they just don't have any sense of safety and security, you know. I love that he went back to the beach, recruited his mates, and were like, right, we're going to show these old guys. I love that so much. So, in 2018, you won the New Zealand Geographic Photographer of the Year Award with an absolutely stunning shot of a sea lion in the surf. Will you tell us about that experience?
Oh, yeah, that was a really cool one for me, actually. And it was, it was actually at St Kilda Beach in Dunedin here. And I've been photographing Elliot Brown, who's one of New Zealand's top surfers at the time. And he'd gone in, it was right on dusk, and I thought I'd paddle in via this little wave that was breaking on the inside. And when I got there, the sea lion turned up, and I thought, oh, hang on, here we go, this is great. This is could be my chance to get the shot that I've been dreaming of all my life. And she hung around with me. She didn't just check me out and bugger off like they often do when I'm swimming with a camera. And so she just hung with me, and she was catching waves past me, and I managed to get a whole lot of photos. I didn't get the photo that I was dreaming of, but I managed to get a whole lot of photos. And I was pretty. It was a pretty cool experience, and just felt really, really cool and nice and mutual checking each other out type of experience. And then eventually it was getting really dark, and she disappeared. So I went in. I remember looking at the photos when I got them out of the water housing and having a look at the camera, and I saw all the photos, and I was actually quite gutted because I didn't get the shot that I had in my head. But there were a couple others that were okay. So I thought, okay, we'll work some of those up and see how we go. And luckily, one of them ended up, everyone seemed to love it. I won the People's Choice for that year of the New Zealand Geographic Photographer of the Year competition, and she won the wildlife category and the overall, which blew me away, actually. It was really amazing. And that sea lion, her name was Vega, and she is a three-year-old sea lion at the time. And she was not quite mature enough to be looking for the boys, but she was playful enough to be able to want to spend time with me. So it was kind of that sweet spot of her age. And she became famous.
That is so special. And folks, if you haven't seen this photo, go on Box of Light. I remember seeing it, and to me it so perfectly encapsulated Pukaki, their cheekiness, their amazing personalities, the fact that they just want to come along and have fun with us. They don't wish to cause us any harm, they don't wish to threaten us, they just don't realise their size in comparison to ours. It is a stunning photo, so do go on Box of Light and check that one out. So, Derek, what else should people know about Pukaki? Or what is one of your most enjoyable experiences you've had with Pukaki?
I think it's really important for people to realise how rare they are, actually. You know, we don't have very many in New Zealand. In fact, the Stewart Island, now we have a colony, an official colony there, because I think there's over 55 pups that are there roughly every year. In Dunedin, Otago and Catlins, we have about 22 pups, I think, last year. And there's quite a bit of mortality among those pups, so it's still pretty small. It's pretty rare to have them. So I think it's really cool to kind of get your head around the fact that in this day and age, we have these megafauna on our beaches that you can interact with, and not necessarily interact with, but you will have interactions
with.
From a distance, at least 10 metres. But you'll have interactions with them purely by them being on your beach and walking past them or being in the surf with you. And I think it's actually really, once you get your head around their behaviour, it's really adds to the experience of being in the water with them or having them on your beaches. You know, I see a lot of the dog walkers at St. Clair. I've got a dog and I walk my dog at St. Clair, and a lot of the dog walkers now, they kind of are so good with the sea lions. You know, they're putting their dogs on their leads when they're walking past them, and they're taking ownership of the sea lions as well. And I think that's super important. Like, it's like they are ours. And yeah,
so
just add to it.
What is creating, I'm sorry, we're about to run out of time, but in a couple of words, what does creating ownership over something give you? What kind of feeling?
I think once you fall in love with something and you realise how important it is, you kind of want to protect it. And that's the key there. For those dog walkers now feel like they are part of their beach and they want to look after them. And it's been amazing.
Absolutely. And there was something you said to me earlier that we have this incredible experience here of watching these sea lions grow up, and from pup to adult, and that is just so special and such a unique experience. Okay, coming up is Boy Crush, I Don't Want You. See you soon.
so awful when no longer care, so awful when no longer care, so awful.
Kia ora, kia ora. You are listening to Radio 1 91 FM. This is Spinning Yarns with Sian. You are listening to Sian, and today I have on a local legend, as I've already said, but if you're just tuning in, an award-winning photographer and a author. He has published 5 books. Welcome back, Derek Morrison.
Thank you, Sian. Great to be here.
Cool. Welcome back. So we've been talking today, if you're just tuning in, about Derek's career beginnings. He started out as a photographer for a surfing magazine, took him to Australia, it's taken him around the world. He's worked with New Zealand Geographic in 2018. He won an award for Photographer of the Year with his incredible photograph of Vegas surfing. So Derek, I want to ask you now, what are your passions and how do you cultivate a career like yours? How do you become successful in today's day and age as a photographer and writer?
Yeah, thank you. That's a good question. I mean, I guess when I started, it was back in the film days, you know, and it was probably a lot easier to do it then because not many people were prepared to go to all the expense of shooting film. Every time I pushed the button on my camera, it was costing me a dollar. So, and I shot a lot of terrible photos back in the day. There's not quite so many bad ones these days, but there's still a few. But when it's costing me a dollar each, you kind of count those up and you...
You would do. Yeah. That's definitely incentive to get better quicker.
Yeah, you had to learn pretty quick. And, you know, like, to be fair, like, I probably should have gone to school and done a learnt the art of photography and the business side of it, and I never did that. I just went out and started doing it because I'd already had my check for $137. So in my mind, I was made. You know, I'd made it already. But really, it took me 10 years of just, you know, living in my car a lot and staying at friends' places and, you know, eating two-minute noodles for breakfast, lunch and tea, and living a pretty meagre lifestyle myself. I didn't have a lot of money. I was doing it pretty tough.
That's very minimalistic, and that's quite the sacrifice for your passion.
Yeah, it is, but I guess at the time I was fairly young and I just loved being out doing what I was doing, so I got a buzz out of it, and all my friends were so welcoming and put up with me for all that time, and I mean, really credit to them, to them for me getting through that whole period, really. But it's, I mean, it came out the other side, and I had learnt a little bit and enough to be able to make it so that I could actually earn some money, and then in Australia I was able to earn a lot of money out of it because it was such a bigger market and it was just a lot easier, and still I kind of also realised that it's a lifelong learning curve. You know, it's a lot like surfing. Surfing's like that as well. You're learning forever. I hope to think that my best wave is still out there and my best photo will still be out there for sure. I'm learning something every day still. So I kind of adopted that and realised that, you know, if I can keep going and keep fit and healthy and able, then I should be able to make a career out of it. And I've been very fortunate. I mean, it changes a lot when I'm by myself and it's just me. Then, you know, I can live on $137 a week, no trouble. Once I had a family, and then it became very different, you know, and I had to start doing more commercial work to pay the bills, which initially I never thought I'd ever want to do, but I ended up, because I'm so passionate about photography as well, the commercial work ends up being something that I really thrive on, enjoy. I really love it. It's a challenge, and it's cool working with teams to produce something. So I do a fair bit of commercial work alongside all the editorial work, and I kind of like the variety as well. I'm very fortunate that I get to do something different just about every day, and that I think most photographers will be in that sort of space, and you know, that just for me, it just works out really, really well. I don't really like routine or anything sort of too much structure around things. I like it to be quite free-flowing life.
Fair enough. And if you are enjoying what you're doing, then they say you never work a day in your life. It sounds like you've created an awesome system to still enjoy your job day after day. And as you say, you're discovering new things day after day and learning new things. And that's wonderful.
Yeah, I do feel very fortunate. I think it's a bit harder now. I think with starting now, if I was trying to give advice to somebody, I mean, I guess it'd be the same. I mean, to be sort of blindly follow your passion, and like if you're doing what you love, you will be successful at it. And it doesn't really have to correlate with just the financial side. It has to correlate with that you feel good about what you're doing as well, and that you're doing something good socially, and that you're looking after or helping to promote a really good future as well. And I think if you can do that, then that's just as important as the financial side.
That's such great advice. As you say, just do you, focus on you, enjoy what you're doing, and success will come. Keep at it. Hard work pays off. Now, Derek, do you have anybody that has inspired you along the way, a mentor or anything of the like?
I'm actually really lucky. One of my mentors is actually a guy called Kim Westerskoff, who grew up in Brighton. And he is, like, he's a 5-time BBC Wildlife Photographer of the Year winner. And he's an absolute legend of a guy. He lives in Tauranga now with his family. And he actually helps me with what I'm doing and is being amazing for me, really. We've had an official, been in and out of having an official mentoring capacity with my work. And just generally, he just helps me all the time, and he challenges me really well. But he's an amazing guy. And probably the other one is when we had the New Zealand Geographic Awards night in 2018. James Frankham, the publisher of New Zealand Geographic, had organised a guy called Robin Hammond to come and talk to us all. So we had all the photographers that assembled there in a theatre, and Robin Hammond started talking to us. And he's a Kiwi-born photographer who works for National Geographic and does some pretty incredible work. And what really inspired me about him was a lot of his work is around, he sort of decided, I guess he decided early on that he was about trying to use his skill and his gift for photography to try and help to make the world a better place. And I thought, oh yeah, that's pretty cool. And then he actually showed how he did it. So he'll go into marginalised communities. So, for example, he'd explore through third world countries their mental health situation and where they're at, and basically do studies of that with his photography. And it's confronting stuff. It's very, very hard to watch and to look at, and really, really, really challenging. He was finding that those stories were just going around the world to a lot of amazing publishers. Taking those stories up, and National Geographic was running them. They were running in all the big newspapers around the world, and just really, really inspiring. He'd basically taken his camera and was using it to try and create a better world with it. And I thought, you know, how do I, what do I learn from that? Like, it really resonated with me. Like, how can I do something similar? How can I make sure that the world I leave behind is going to be better than what it was when I was here? And part of that, for me, locally, with Vega winning all the awards at that event, I thought, how can I do that? So we actually sold prints of Vega from the award-winning photo, and we've got, I think there's a couple left that haven't sold yet, but we've sold most of them, and we were giving a portion of the sale to the New Zealand Sea Lion Trust. And I think last year we gave about $2,000 this time of year to New Zealand Sea Lion Trust to help support the work that they're doing. And, you know, that's just part of it. And then also I sort of then decided I'd make sure I said yes to any opportunity to speak about sea lions. And so we've done a lot of speaking to help educate different audiences around sea lion behaviour and how to act around them, and specifically in that interaction, human-sea lion interaction space, which, if we're really lucky, there's going to be a lot more of that. You know, if we can get to the point where we've actually got a proper colony here in Otago, which would be amazing, then, you know, we're going to see a lot more of that interaction. So the more people know about how to deal with sea lions, the better.
Could not agree with you more. They are coming back, because a common misconception is that the subantarctic islands is where they originated, it's where they belong. In fact, they were once all across Aotearoa, and this is their natural habitat, mainland Aotearoa, not the subantarctic islands. They have quite a hard time down there. So as Derek's saying, they're coming back, and the power of photography is telling these stories, which is so amazing. So in our last minute of the show, do you have another project on the horizon?
I've always got lots of projects on the horizon. I've got a couple of really amazing ones. Unfortunately, I can't talk about those ones just yet. It's a bit too early. However, we've just clicked over to 12 years of Box of Light, and I'm hoping to put a book together on that 12 years. By the time the book comes out, it'll probably be 13. So probably 13 years of Box of Light. And we get asked a lot. We put a book out very early on, Seasons, and everyone really loved that. It was just a great portrait of Dunedin from the coastal view. So there's a lot of people asking me for another one, a follow-up to that. So that's in the pipeline.
That is very exciting. All right, folks, that brings us to the end of today's episode. If you haven't yet checked out Box of Light, go on to social media, go on to the website, check out Box of Light, check out Derek's incredible photography. He also has a studio across from the train station here in Dunedin. Derek, thank you so much for being on Spinning Yarns with Sian. It was a treat.
Kia ora. Thank you, Sian. It's awesome.
Have a good week, folks. I will see you next Thursday, or rather, you will hear me.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.